This is The Film Effect with Tiff.
Your hearing is deteriorating rapidly.
We'll come back. Till then, Lou, we just keep going, okay?
No.
Lou, no. Let's play tomorrow. Let's see what it's like, okay? I'm gonna be like a clip track. You can play to me.
Do you understand me? I can't. I'm deaf. I'm deaf.
I found a place.
I think it's important that you stay here with us right now, Reuben. We're looking for a solution to this. Not this.
I need you to wait for me. Okay, you're it for me, Lou. You're my bar. You're it for me. Okay, you gotta wait for me.
I'm trying to save my life.
Reuben, the world does keep moving. It can be a damn cruel place. But those moments of stillness...
Have a guest sitting in front of me. No zooming. I'm sick of zooming.
Me too.
Right? All right. So anyway, if you heard the opening, you might have guessed, or you probably didn't, because this movie's kind of new. But the movie is Sound of Metal, and I have a friend of mine here. She's also a part of the Social Podcast Network, Tara.
Mm-hmm. Hi.
Hi, Tara.
Hello.
Welcome.
Thanks.
You can. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. I'm Tara. Tara Elizabeth, as we have discussed on a previous podcast.
I was afraid to say. I think Tara. You should just be Tara from now on, like okay. No more last name.
I don't know why I just have this urge to say Tara Elizabeth, but Tara Elizabeth Gush, however you would like to refer to me, I will respond. I am part of the podcast network here. I just got finished recording for myself, so I've already been talking for over an hour. That's okay. I like to talk. So, which is why I podcast.
Okay,
so my podcast is called the Be Soulfish Podcast, and I bring guests on to talk about trauma and healing. I also just rebranded Soul Vitality, which is my new transformative living coaching business, where I will hopefully be working with clients one-on-one in groups for people who have experienced trauma, loss, grief, life change, you know, COVID happens, whatever, in your life,
all the
things. And I've created what's called the Shift Method. So utilizing my teaching background, health and wellness, yoga therapy to create personalized programs for people to transform their lives.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thank we need you. More people. I think this is great. There's definitely, I think, more of a push towards this since
mm-hmm.
COVID started.
Absolutely.
Everyone is, all of us are kind of realizing ourselves,
mm-hmm.
less things to distract from ourselves, although there still are.
Yeah.
I shouldn't say that. People can distract any way they want. But I do think there's definitely been I've noticed that. Have you noticed a change or?
Yes. And it's interesting. I'll kind of hold some of this, my thought on this, because some of it has to do with the movie.
Oh, good. Okay, cool.
But the guest that I interviewed on my podcast this morning, who will come on. And if people who are local know Trey Bell, his girlfriend.
Oh, my God. Right? He was here?
No, I did a Zoom call with his girlfriend. Now, he's supposed to be on my podcast, too. We just haven't scheduled it. But so they're currently out in Colorado. But she is a licensed therapist, also going to school for yoga therapy, also a yoga instructor, all the things. And so we were having these, you know, this discussion about trauma and healing. And of course, it led to like this idea of meditation and breath work and stillness. And I brought up this movie because of the ending of the movie, which we can kind of put off for our discussion. But it all kind of wrapped together. But it was in this discussion on how COVID has affected us all, you know, differently. But for many of us, it's, you know, put us in this place where we are forced to kind of slow down and not be busy, busy, busy doing all the things and, you know, taking more walks in nature and doing things like that. So
awesome. Yeah. Well, it's funny because, and I will say, disclosure, this is not a movie you picked.
No.
So I kind of forced it upon you. but we've been talking, and I think, you know, I think if I were to ask, you probably do have some movies you mentioned.
Yeah, we talked about, well, funny, I wanted to pick Friday because that's like my favorite movie.
Oh my
ever.
God, I forgot. All right, well, listen, I'm sorry, and I will bring you back.
It's fine.
But go ahead.
It was Friday and Remember the Titans.
Right.
And,
so look what I did.
Oh, what was the other one with Lady Gaga?
Oh, yeah. I think of as Shallow, but that was the one that
Tom.
Yeah,
so Tom wanted to do that, so that's why we didn't do that. But Remember the Titans is just one of my favorite movies. But I like this movie that you picked. I think it was perfect.
It was weird because I've just been looking for, you know, I watch TV movies, and I've been looking for independent films because I think there's been a lot more of them in the past year that are just kind of floating around. And I saw this movie just randomly in a list of like top movies, indie movies to watch in 2020. And I just put it on. And I like this actor. I will say this guy. Let me see. I need to pull up his name. But I've seen him in other things. So I was already really excited to see this, Riz Ahmed, because he's a great actor. And he's just such a good actor.
What else is he in? Because he kind of looked familiar, but I couldn't quite.
He was in
why.
A show on HBO that was called The Night Of. Where he played a person that was accused of a murder. I think it was, a murder that he said he was innocent.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and so the whole thing is about that. And it's like you don't really know what the truth is, and you're kind of weaving through this. It's a really well-done series, and I just highly recommend if anybody had never seen it. It's really great. It has John Turturro in it. He plays the lawyer. It's a great show. But that was, I think, his breakthrough role. The mm-hmm. people had never seen him before, and they were like, who is this guy? He's so great. But anyway, so let me, I'm going to give you guys like the facts, the stats, the details of this movie before we start discussing it. So, and also thank you for being willing to watch it. Because
mm-hmm.
we had talked, I'd been on your show,
mm-hmm.
and I was kind of like, you know, thinking about trauma and things around trauma. And also for me, it always brings up recovery. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know this movie was going to have any element of that at all.
I didn't either.
At all. So when I saw it, it kind of blew my mind. I was like, what a great story about all things, but also about this as well. Mm-hmm. And I really, and the simplicity of it was so great too. So, okay. So Sound of Metal just came out 2019. It's directed by Darius Marder. It's written by Darius Marder. Oh my God. It's like siblings or something. Darius Marder, Abraham Marder. There's like four people that wrote this movie. How did they do that? Sort of. Yeah. There's like another third person here. Derek Cianfrance. I can't say his name. Stars Riz Ahmed, Olivia Cooke, who is also, I think she's kind of new and young, but she's been in other things. Apparently, because I have teenagers. Stella told me that she was in Me, Earl, and the Dying Girl, which was also a book.
Okay.
I do not know. I didn't really remember that. And it has some other movie. Paul Racy, Lauren Ridloff. And I'm assuming a lot of people that are actually deaf. Mm. I would guess. And that's like something we can...
Right.
I didn't do my research, so sorry, guys. Feel free to send me hate mail or any mail that you want to send at this point. Please challenge me. Okay, so you were willing to watch this. Let me ask, what was your first reaction to this movie? How did you feel about it?
Like initially, like, so I took notes because I'm a nerd.
I love
so
that you brought notes.
Well, partially because I can't remember anything.
So
that was really it. But I will say, like my first thought when it started, I was slightly turned off in the first 2 minutes because of the noise. I have like a little bit of like a noise issue, right? Like nails on a chalkboard or certain voices screaming. You know what I mean? I'm very, what's the word I'm looking for? I don't know. It makes me cringe. Like certain things kind of make me like cringe and lose my mind. And the very first moments of that movie is like these noises.
It's a lot of sounds.
Right? It's a lot of sounds because they're on stage and it's like the drumming, it's her screaming. It's like, you know, and at one point I was like, oh my God, is this shit going to, when is this going to stop?
Right?
You know, but it was powerful. It was a really powerful opening.
Mm-hmm.
And then what I noticed was that they had that opening scene that was what it was, and that it immediately went into their trailer, and now here he is playing jazz music and making a green smoothie, and I was like, what is going on?
I know. So, you're like, this guy's interesting, huh?
Yeah. So my interest was piqued immediately because I was like, this is interesting. Like, here's this guy covered in tattoos or playing in this heavy metal band. It's like dark, grungy, and then the next thing you know, he's in a trailer playing jazz music, waking up early to make green smoothies for his girlfriend. So I was intrigued.
Yeah, it's awesome. And for me, this is my favorite kind of movie making because when I went to film school, we had to do a whole year of storytelling and films without any dialogue. So you had to learn visual storytelling really well, which this movie, I think, did extremely well in the beginning, where it's just showing you a bunch of stuff that tells you quite a bit very quickly about these people.
Speaking in the very first opening scenes, one of the things that stuck out was the female. I can't think. What was her name in the movie? Lou.
Her name is Lou.
Ruben and Lou. So
yes,
when she is in bed in the trailer waking up and he comes in to kind of try to get her to get up, you can see her arm and you can see the slashes on her arm. And it wasn't like a huge standout thing. I think if you weren't really paying attention, you wouldn't have seen it. But I noticed it immediately. So my head already started spinning like, ooh, what's her story?
Mm. Yeah, like what's up with this relationship, right? Mm-hmm. And he's very caretaking of her.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, and I'm so sorry. I did not read this plot line, storyline, whatever the description of what they call. It's funny. It's one sentence. A heavy metal drummer's life is thrown into free fall when he begins to lose his hearing.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So we know that's what the movie's about. If you watch a trailer before you see it, you know this is what it's going to be about. Mm-hmm. But in the beginning, we're just watching these people and guess what, you know what's weird is I told you to watch this and I'm just realizing also van life.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like they're literally living and in a can van. You share this about yourself so people know what I'm talking about?
Gosh, let me see. I'm almost embarrassed to share because I'm like haven't even started this process, but
doesn't matter.
So I purchased a van. You know, I've been wanting to kind of travel the country, which I did after college, and I've been wanting to, you know, hop in an RV and take my dogs, and that's been for years. So long story short, I had a little midlife crisis slash whatever in October and traded in my dream car, which was a beautiful pearl white Toyota 4Runner, for this lovely Dodge Ram ProMaster that is sitting outside. And my plan is to build it out as a camper van and travel in it on some level. Who knows really what's going to happen.
Doing it.
So it's not moving along quickly. I have the fan and I have the sounds mufflers and embarrassingly enough, I'm not sure I should. Well, I think I did share it with you that
you should talk to Trey about that.
I did talk to Trey about it.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
So I did. I had a little fender bender.
Oh.
And my airbags deployed.
That's right. We talked about that.
Yes, we talked about that. So actually, Dodge is coming out to investigate it.
Investigate?
Investigate it on Monday because I was not even driving. I was going like 2 miles per hour.
Right.
So they're going to investigate and see if there was something wrong with the airbags. So in a perfect world, Dodge will fix them. In a non-perfect world, I'm going to pay a lot of money to fix them. And then I'm going to eventually start the build in February.
It's
going to
be great.
Yeah. So it'll happen.
You have it in front of you. You have the first step.
Right. I have it. I have no choice but to do it. So
you are being pushed forward in some way. Mm-hmm.
But I did notice that when I was watching it. Because
did you see that right away? Yeah.
They have a really sweet silver, what is it, an Airstream or something? And so it's much larger than my van because they can, you know, it's got like a bedroom shot. I mean, it's a larger van. But yes, I was thinking that when I was watching it. I was like, ooh, they're kind of living this life and they're like, you know, their van's parked in the parking lot and it was,
Hey, It's great. I'm psyched for you. I'm obsessed with it, by the way.
Van life?
Yes. I actually was scrolling last night on YouTube. I have a tendency to scroll. This is now we're just going off the topic of the movie. But I love when you see it, especially like that in a movie, and it gives you this vibe of like, what's it like when these people get up in the morning? And like, and I'm sure it's movie-esque, but do you find that to be pretty true? That whole like opening of them kind of getting up and like doing their thing in the morning. And
And I don't think that van life is all glamorous. I mean, I follow people who share like, you know, it's not all like roses here on the road.
Yeah, I don't think so.
But I do think, you know, the female that I interviewed this morning, which is Trey's girlfriend, cause he has his van. Now they do have a home base, but she was sharing how they took an entire month because they both work as therapists trying to figure out if they could work remotely. So they took an entire 30 days this sometime during COVID and just traveled in the van. And they had 3 days a week that they were doing remote work. And then the other 4 days they were hiking and rock climbing. And, you know, they drove the van around and parked it wherever. And she loved it. And so I think and what she was stating again was it's this whole idea of simplicity. You know, you're living in this van. You don't need a lot. You're doing exactly what you need with exactly what you need and connecting back to nature. And I mean, unless you're somebody that does need a lot of shit.
It's very appealing to me.
It's
even though I'm probably not really understanding myself at this age and this time in my life. But all right, so let's get back to the movie. But so they're setting us up. We've got this guy. He's with his girlfriend. They are a duo of a rock band. Pretty heavy music, a lot of noise, right? So I love stories like this. They're so simple. Here's a guy whose sound and noise and music are a huge part of his life. He wakes up and puts on jazz music as he's. So this isn't something that's just. You know, a sidebar.
It's not just his job.
It's like such a huge part of his existence. And pretty quickly into the story, we notice that he's starting to lose his hearing. And if you can refresh my memory, I'm trying to remember exactly how that shows up.
It's pretty. So the first scene, then they're doing the smoothies. And I don't remember if it was in the trailer or at the music store, but one of the two, he starts to get the ringing in his ears.
Yes.
And, you know, you can see, like, they play the ringing in his ears and then the sound in the room, start, you know, other people are there and it's getting muffled. And you can immediately see, you know, his facial expression. He's already starting to, like, panic.
Yes.
You know, it's like this
And then
terror.
They take you on this montage of him going to shows and he's... They're putting out the stuff to sell, the merch. There's all this stuff happening. And you start to realize that he's... Because what's great is the way they did this with sound is, like, we're just with this guy. So as you're watching it, you're not hearing, too. So you are just kind of noticing all the things that he's noticing till eventually it gets bad enough that he's got to tell... First, he doesn't even tell her, remember? He goes to the... So he goes to handle this by himself. Now, I'm going to bring up... Now, I'm going to jump around. But this is the point I really... They don't show this right away, but you said you got a hint from her with the marks on her arm, right? And pretty quickly after this whole things happen with his, he finds out his hearing is just going to deteriorate and he's going to have to do something about it or deal with it in some way. That these people are both kind of in recovery, right? So he, at some point, you get to find out that he's sober and that he has been a drug addict. He was a drug addict. It sounds like she probably was too.
Yes.
Yeah. And, I don't know. I thought that was just such a cool storyline. And to me, one of the most impacting scenes was that scene that they have when she decides to leave him. Because she's like, you've got to go deal with this, right? This is after. So first, I'm going to rush through this a little bit. But he realizes his hearing is really going. He goes to this doctor. The guy tells him, this is the deal. And he's like, I just have to save the money to deal with this. But then he calls his sponsor because she's worried he's going to have a relapse.
Yes.
That's like her first concern is like, you're going to fucking go back out, you know, and we need to get you in touch with your sponsor. So she's helping him communicate with people. At this point, he can't hear anything. He can't even have a conversation on the phone with someone.
Right.
There's all this going on with the writing and she's trying to kind of help him in this moment of being able to communicate with the people he's close to. And then they end up at this magical... which I think is kind of a magical place. And I don't know what it is with me. I am just really in love with places of recovery. And I'm not even an addict. Like, my only experience with this is, I don't know if I told you this, but maybe I did. I'm sharing a lot today, but it's what I do. So I'm an Al-Anon, and at one point in my Al-Anon journey, I had been told by my sponsor that I should try to go to this thing in Karen Foundation. Do you know what the Karen Foundation is?
I've heard of it, but I don't. I'm not quite sure I know what it is. So I probably will once you start.
They have a program called Breakthrough, where you go, and if you feel kind of stuck or you feel like you need to, like, it's like a very immersive therapy experience. So it's really just to go and, like really deal with, you know, like if you want to like do some hardcore.
So is it like a residential program? You go for a week, stay there.
You go for a week. I'm telling everyone about this. I'm not supposed to share too much about it. Actually, it's like a cult. Like, you cannot share about it. Well, you can't share about the details of the program because they don't want you to ruin it for other people.
Right.
But you go for like about a week. It's like 7 days, and it's a group of about 10 to 12 people, I think. So yeah, you stay there. You do group therapy the entire time. So this reminded me a bit of my experience with that a little bit, where you're kind of thrown into a weird situation and everybody's just as weirded out as you are. And then you have to kind of work together to like heal.
Yeah. You know, and I've,
please talk.
When that scene for me was like really painful to watch, that scene in the parking lot where she, you know by the end of it that she had already made the arrangements and the plans to fly out and leave. Like she already knew what she was doing. And she basically just, in my mind, in a sense, it was like throwing him to the wolves. Like, I'm leaving you. You need to go take care of your shit. And I felt really bad for him.
Did you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I knew in my mind it was probably the best thing for him on some level as well. But I just felt like, gosh, here is this guy, like, who on a daily basis is already doing his best and trying to stay in recovery. And now here he is losing his hearing, which for him is his entire life. And now here you are, the love of his life, leaving him in his most time of need. And so I kind of struggled with that because part of me felt like, yes, that recovery house was probably where he needed to go. But on the same token, like, as someone who's supposed to be in love with him, like, I just don't know. I don't know how I felt about it.
It's interesting. At this point in my experience, it made perfect sense to me only because of the setup they had with the situation, which was she cannot be there. You're not allowed to have your spouse there or your friend, whatever. It's you come solo. And he was really addicted to her. And so she's like his drug. Okay. So in a sense that like you could see the attachment, like, they really were doing everything together. They were in a band together. They're living together, on the road together, and maybe even in recovery together on some level. And it felt like she knew that if she didn't leave, he wouldn't go there. So she was really being like, it felt like really hard. I mean, it's a great scene because you can see how much they care about each other. And at the same token, it's like very just tough, you know, where she's trying to get a little angry with him because she knows she's got to leave. And I thought that was a pretty amazing, I don't know, I thought it was really adult of her.
Yeah.
Because young people don't act like that, in my opinion. You know, it's like, you know, because if she didn't leave, they would have, he would have never gone there. And who knows what would have happened with the two of them.
Right. Well, and it's interesting, too, when you get full circle, which I guess it's going to the end of the movie, but
let's go.
My most like profound
thought.
Yeah,
I want to see your notes. Tell me what you wrote down. Let's go your take.
I wrote notes here, like just about their relationship and that it was this crazy trauma bond. So at the end, when they, after he's gone through the program and, you know, goes through all these things that we haven't even gotten to yet.
It's okay.
And they reconnect at the end. It's like they're still in love on some level and are happy to see each other, but it's like that weird moment when they're laying in bed. And, like, he just looks at her, and he's like, she doesn't even have to say it.
I was crying my eyes out.
I know.
Am I
going to cry, like, talking about
it? I'm just telling you, this movie got me.
Yeah.
Like, I was fucking crying. It was crazy.
It was awful, because you realize, like, okay, these two people now, they still love each other, but now they realize that they don't need each other in the same way, and that their whole relationship was based on, I hate to use the word trauma bond too, because I think that's, I'm seeing that everywhere on Instagram now. Even
is, like, that a thing? I don't even know what that means exactly. Like,
well, it basically means like, you know, you create these attachments with people. You meet someone and maybe you've experienced the same trauma or similar traumas.
Oh.
So you're like, you're attracted to people who basically need like the same or similar or some type of healing. And it's like, you just attach, and it's not in a healthy manner, you know? So their relationship was essentially built probably around the fact that they are both in recovery. And
right.
It sounds like maybe that's how they met. You know, I guess we're not really sure, but at the end of it, after she's had time away from him, and you can see she's like gone back to her family, and she had other things that she needed to heal. And he has tried to work himself through this loss of hearing. So they're just, it's like the connection has been.
It's just changed. Yeah. Yes. It was such a real moment that I feel like I'm laughing, but way more mature than I've been with people. Mm-hmm. Okay. Which I thought was just so beautiful about it. Mm-hmm. It was like they just understood each other in that moment. Right. And
like he was able to let her go, even though he didn't want to.
Right. Okay. So let's get into the nooks. So what I love about these kinds of stories is something really real happens to force people to do something they would never do, like mm-hmm. look at themselves or change or go through some experience where they have to finally, like, I don't know. For me, this whole movie, when I think about one word around it, is acceptance. Mm-hmm. And that was the key word that kept coming up for me because, and we don't know from the beginning, and that's kind of what I like about this too, is that's why I want to curious how you saw this, because they don't explain a lot, and I love the reveals.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they don't tell you, like, what a reveal when you find out that she's rich, mm-hmm. right? She's in France. She's loaded, by the way, and mm-hmm. like, you would have never assumed that the first time you see these two people. It was such a weird take.
Yeah.
And suddenly I'm like, oh, wow, that's a whole other level of the story mm-hmm. that we didn't really get to see. But I think really it's his story, and all of these things orchestrating around him are to push and pull him in these different directions. And it takes him losing his hearing to really kind of get it, you know, mm-hmm. about himself. What did you think about that?
I would agree. And, you know, interestingly, I did my tarot card pull this morning for the new moon, because it's a new moon in Pluto.
Wow.
And my card pull was acceptance.
Shut up.
That was my card.
What was the card?
That's exactly what it was, acceptance. It's not like the traditional. Yeah, it's a different card deck. And, of course, I can't, because I did actually two pulls this morning. But that one card pull was acceptance. And it's, you know, it's fitting for me, too, at this point in my life. But it was basically about, you know, it's not even just forgiveness. It's, you know, for me, I feel like acceptance and forgiveness are kind of two different things, but just this idea of being able to accept your past as what it was, because you can't change it or alter it, and, mm-hmm. you know, accept the new path or journey that you're on.
Yeah. And he didn't want to do that at all.
Right. And who would?
I guess that's true. Yeah.
I mean, I thought about that too. I was like, even just like little things, like I like to listen to the birds chirping, and I listen to music all the time.
Yeah.
I'm, you know, like I wake up, I put music on when I'm making my coffee. You know, I can't imagine not being able to hear music.
Yeah, it's definitely.
And that's so ingrained in my yoga instruction and my spin.
Right.
Like for me with yoga, and even I teach my Pilates class because of the way it is now with Zoom, I'm not really able to use my music or use it in the same manner when I teach, because it doesn't work well with the Zoom if we're doing like in person and Zoom together. And I really struggled the first couple of weeks not teaching with music, because for me, my music is what drives the whole class.
So weird.
Right? And so teaching weird. In silence, it was like physically painful for me.
That's crazy.
To not be able to have music playing. I'm like, oh. And I took a yoga class somewhere where there was no music, and I was getting frustrated.
Yeah.
I was like, when are you going to start your damn playlist?
Let me ask a weird question. Can you think of a time when something like this happened to you that forced you to change, that was external?
Like physically?
No, not physically. Just anything. I mean, I know you're going through.
I mean, like my divorce.
Maybe, yeah. Okay, so right. So maybe that's for you. Yeah.
I mean, probably like my father's death would maybe be another one.
Mm-hmm.
My divorce was definitely.
Is like a death, yeah.
Definitely like a death.
That's how it feels to me,
too. A good death, though. Is that possible?
A triumphant war death.
Oh, my God.
No, but I love that, and I just, that connects to me personally a lot, just the concept of that, and something that you can't work your way around, you know,
mm-hmm.
like there's not much he could have done to work his way around this one.
No. Well, you know, and I thought about, somebody posted on Facebook recently, so it's out there in public. And of course I can't think of the family's name, but there's a local family whose son has just been injured in a,
I heard about this. Yeah. Yes. My kids are know this kid.
I figured. Yeah. So that struck me, and
it's crazy.
You know, Yeah, and I have a friend who is also injured at the moment, which I'm not going to talk about on the podcast. But those two incidents this week made me think, too, mm-hmm. like, wow, like, literally in a matter of 3 to 5 seconds.
Crazy.
Like, your entire life and world could change. And it sounds like this young kid had surgery, and hopefully it'll
I don't
well.
Know anything. I just don't literally really know, heard but very little about it. But like, that's
yeah.
It's a scenario where life presents and it's like, what are you going to do with this? Mm-hmm. But I love that storyline. And in the story, you watch him struggle with that, which is acceptance of where he's at, mm-hmm. which is you really can't hear. And aside from getting a lot of money, which he sees, let's talk about this a little bit too. He sees this as like a fix-all. Mm-hmm. And how many times do we look at something out, like we have a problem or we have a scenario that has really kind of like shaken us. Mm-hmm. Or created a problem, and we feel like there's some specific fix. Mm-hmm. And we focus in on the fix instead of being with whatever it is in the moment, like how quickly we kind of, you know. And then I think in the story with him, it brings out his alcoholic personality, which is something I don't like to coin, but it's definitely
like
what...
dry addict.
Yes. And you watch him go through this where he starts, and it's so funny because it only really starts... when he checks her email, his email, and he gets that thing from her, or he sees her on the web. Mm-hmm. So it just shows you how addicted he is to kind of like whatever that relationship was or what it was holding for him mm-hmm. to just suddenly decide like, okay, fuck this place. I'm getting this thing and I'm out of here. Back to my old life and wanting to hold on to what was. Mm-hmm. Am I getting too deep with this movie?
No, I mean, it makes sense. Well, and it's interesting because the conversation's tying into my podcast this morning, too, which seems to happen. It's very strange.
That is
so
weird.
Right. We had this whole conversation of the words and the verbiage that we use when we're talking about like trauma and healing. And when we use sometimes like a word like change. Or healing, it alludes to this idea of fixing something. And, you know, the guy from the older gentleman who runs the rehabilitation place, yes. He makes a statement when, what is his name?
When Ruben
wants to leave and have the ear surgery, he makes a statement, you know, here in this house, we run this house on the premise that being deaf is not a handicap and not something to be fixed, right? And so we talked about that on the podcast this morning. Like when you're working with trauma patients, you know, it's important to stress that like you're not broken, you don't need to be fixed. You know, but it's just a matter of like growing and evolving and transforming and like shifting into a different version of yourself, I guess maybe would be a better way to state it. Right.
Yeah. And I love that. I think that's important to say. Let me ask you, what other notes did you have? Cause I know you're on a tight schedule.
I know, I'm looking at the time. It's okay. I got like 15, 20 minutes.
All right, let's go.
What else?
Take over, Tara.
Okay. So I wrote about the beginning. I noticed, you know, her slits on her arms. I wrote down just the word denial. And, you know, lying to his girlfriend in the beginning and this anger. And so, you know, denial was a thing I wrote down just because I think when we do have a traumatic experience or event, that's just one of the stages you go through. You know, you kind of either deny what happened or deny the intensity of it or deny how it's affecting you, you know, whatever it
or
is.
Or even deny the future of what you think it's going to be for you.
Right.
Which I think is what's happening with him a lot too.
Right. There's some level of denial, which is relatable too. I mean, I think for any of us as a normal human being, if somebody were to tell you like, yeah, you're not gonna be able to hear anymore ever again, your first thought is probably not going to be like, okay, I accept this. You know, I mean,
awesome. I can't wait for this experience.
Right. Like you're probably going to freak out. Fight it on some level. Right. I put some notes on here, like when she reached out to the sponsor, Hector, mm-hmm. I just had jotted some notes down, like the importance of when you do have trauma or you are in recovery, like having a solid support system is important. Like, if you don't have the support system or you don't have the resources, you're way more likely to go back to bad habits.
Totally.
Or not be able to work your way through. There are some pieces that were really like hit me. I jotted some notes down about when the gentleman who runs that facility said to Ruben, I want you to go into this room every morning and sit.
My
and
favorite
write,
part.
Right?
One of my favorite parts.
Especially that first scene, yes. Right? When he comes down and it's like, and like you said, this whole idea of simplicity, like he comes down and it's literally just this wooden table with a cup, a pot of coffee, and a donut.
And the donut.
That for some reason I like thought was an apple cinnamon donut. I don't know why. I'm going with it.
It looked pretty much like
right?
that. It was kind of, yeah.
Yeah. And so he takes it up to the room and it's just this empty room. And the guy doesn't say like, I want you to go up and meditate.
No.
But that's kind of what he wants him to do. And he goes up and he's like smashing the donut.
I love his character so much. I don't know why. And hello, everyone. That's what I'm attracted to. So,
dark, grungy.
No, but like the trueness of his personality was on the surface. Mm-hmm. And at the same token, he was so like lovable, mm-hmm. I thought personally. Yeah. And I loved watching him struggle through this.
Yeah, but because it was real and raw, and it's like that's what it looks like to go through the shit. Like you're gonna sit there, whether you're smashing your donut on the table and then reforming it into a donut again,
such an awesome
and
move.
Smashing it again. I was like, God, that looks like it feels really good.
Yeah.
You know, like I mean, because there's just a lot of real raw anger and frustration in all of it. So you kind of watch as he goes through, like going up to this room every day. And trying to do that and being angry. And then even when he started writing, like there was even anger in the writing, like the scribbling. And then, you know, you go through the whole movie. And by the end of it, when you get to the end and, you know, he ends up leaving his girlfriend.
Yes,
and he's out.
Yes.
And he realizes that these implants that he spent all this money on are driving him crazy.
Right.
Because the noises are not the same. And he like rips them out of his ears. And then, you know, this final scene is him
so
sitting
beautiful.
In quiet stillness. And it goes back to... I don't know if I didn't write the quote down specifically, I should have, but the guy from the rehab center says, in moments of stillness, in your moments of stillness, that's when you will never be abandoned or something of that nature, right? In moments of stillness, no one will ever abandon you. I forget the exact word.
No, and you're right. I should have done my homework.
Yeah.
Hello.
Of course, I wrote it down. I didn't write it completely.
But yeah, it's the reason why he sends him to the sit with himself. Mm-hmm. Because if you can't be with yourself in stillness, nothing else. That's the first step, kind of. It's like, can you just try to be with yourself, mm-hmm. you know? And he does it by the end. At the end, it's such a great mm-hmm. moment.
And part of me was like, I don't really want the movie to end on this, but it made sense to end it that way.
I thought it was perfect.
As well.
I mean, that's my judgment of it, but I thought it was perfect. That just look on his face mm-hmm. is why he's a good actor. Mm-hmm. There was something like, it was like looking at a person where all of the, he just softened.
Mm-hmm.
There was a softening on his face where he just like kind of, mm-hmm. you know, it you could read it and it was like, there were no words necessary.
Yeah.
It was just,
And his facial expressions were great. I mean, mm-hmm. you can read all of his feelings on his face throughout the entire movie. And part of it was like looking at a little boy. You know, it's like looking at he kind of looked like this little boy who was in pain, you know, throughout the entire movie, really. And then there were pieces in there, like when he's working with the kids at the school.
Right.
That were like full of joy, you know, and he's like rolling around the grass and, you know, playing outside with them. And it's like, you know, you see these little pieces of like... a little boy who is healed kind
right.
of coming out.
It's funny. I'll bring up one more other. I get more as I talk about it. Another concept that or theme in the story for me was the idea about the concept of identity
mm-hmm.
and who we decide we are. Right. So you watch him go through that too, which is he's this guy. Okay. He's in a band. He's a drummer. He's this guy. And he doesn't want to be this other guy. He mm-hmm. doesn't want to be, and he doesn't know who he is. Like going into this deaf community and being a part of that, there's a lot of resistance. And then there's a part of it where he just lets go and becomes a part of. And that's interesting to me because you get to see that there's so many different pieces of him and different identities within him. And I kept thinking, because I'm always trying to... it's funny how you watch things and you start deciding what people are.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, maybe he'll be a teacher now. And maybe he'll... you know, like you start kind of making it up. But it doesn't matter. It's just interesting that we don't even know ourselves when we decide... we're just this. We don't realize there's all these other pieces. And until something like this happens to this guy, he was unable to see in that way, like all the other possibilities of his identity.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know. What do you think about that?
Well, I think the idea of creating your identity, or, you know, like when I talk about trauma on the podcast or just in general, if you're working with clients, like it's this idea of don't attach yourself to your story.
Yes.
You know, like your identity and who you are is not what you have been through, you know, and that's something that I struggled with for a long time, right? Like I'm not my story. I'm not my family. And for a long time, I created this identity for myself that was very much attached to dysfunction.
Right.
And even my marriage. And that was a big thing too. When I was divorced, I'm like, well, oh fuck, who am I now that I'm not married? You know?
So true. Yeah.
So yeah, I think this idea of when you go through something, you often have to kind of recreate yourself or recreate a new identity and like, who are you not attached to what you do?
There we go. Now we're getting deep.
Through. Right.
It's very Ram Dass. Mm-hmm. Like the non-attachment and the not identifying with like, this is who I am.
Yeah. Which is hard. I mean, and I find myself even in that right now because I'm so like deep into everything I'm trying to do with the soul vitality business. And it's like, I live and breathe it. And then sometimes I'm like, I need to take a step back. Cause what am I doing outside of that right now?
It's true. I mean, listen, and society, whatever our world is, creates that for us, you know? And for him, it could look very literal. Like, okay, you're a drummer and now you're deaf. Mm-hmm. This is it. Deaf people hang out here. I mean, I'm just serious. Like, one thing I thought was really interesting, and I wonder if they had real people. It seemed like those were real people that were actually deaf people in those scenes, which had a realness to it, which felt really cool to watch. I had a point. This is what happens to me. But then at first he resists it, then he becomes a part of, and then it's almost like there's that identity. Am I this now? Am I a person in a deaf community that lives in this world and only stays in this world because it's the most comfortable place to be? And I kept thinking that too. Honestly, the weirdest part for me was wondering what was he going to do, because and I guess it doesn't really matter because his acceptance is key overall, no matter what path he picks. But it was something I was thinking of, like, I can really see why people that have that would want to stay there. Because it is a hard world out here if you're deaf and no one else is.
Absolutely.
So, and there's nothing wrong with that either. So why not go there, you know?
Right.
And I think we all do that in other ways in our lives. Yeah.
I mean, whether you're talking about like being in the deaf community or even like, you know, if you're in the yoga community or you have joined the local kickboxing
gym.
Yeah,
that's true.
You know, like I feel like everybody kind of picks their community.
True.
Not everybody. A lot of people pick their community.
I think they do it unconsciously, most of us.
Right. And you stick with it, and that's where you're comfortable, you know?
Uh-huh.
Absolutely.
Right. So I don't know. What else do you have to share about this film? And I thank you again for watching it, because I did not let you pick it.
No, I mean, I really enjoyed it. And it goes along with all the topics I talk about anyway. You know, we kind of discussed this already, but I had written down some notes about these, you know, dry behaviors of an addict. Because,
okay, let's go there.
And that kind of goes along with what I think you and I maybe, you know, probably popped up on our podcast, and it pops up on all my shows where I'm interviewing people who are in recovery or, you know, with someone in recovery, because you can still have the same behaviors and response patterns even when you are sober, right? Because there's still these underlying issues, and that's why you go for the drink or you go for the drug. So I don't know where I found that term, dry addict, but yeah, I mean, I took notes on that thinking like there were pieces of that movie where you can see him just engaging in these behaviors that were really kind of like out of desperation, you know, like these desperate or angry behaviors that would have typically probably caused him to go shoot up again.
Probably. Yeah.
But you know, I think that's a big piece of recovery, working on how to manage those behaviors.
Yeah. It's like looking at your patterns, you know, and that's why I love people like Joe, the guy, that is pulling the mirror out and saying like, in a very, like, that was a good scene, too. I know you have to go soon. Where he's telling him he's going to do this thing, that he's going to go do the surgery. And he's got to deal with him in a very kind way, but in a very honest way. And the way that guy balanced both of those things was so cool. Like, to watch him feel the hurt of this thing of kind of like, man, mm-hmm. I've been teaching you all these things. Like, what are you doing? And I'm sure that's what people experience in recovery, which is people go through all these things and they throw it in the trash and they run right back out. Mm-hmm. And so it's got to be a little hard. But at the same token, he handled it in such a beautiful way.
That was a painful scene to watch, too. And right. I didn't really... When that conversation started, mm-hmm. I wasn't expecting it to go where it went. And then like halfway through the conversation, I was like, oh shit, he's going to kick him out,
yeah.
you know, but yeah. you're right. He handled it very respectfully and in a way, yeah, it was a painful scene.
It's a painful scene, but it was, to me, it said so much. And mm-hmm. it was kind of like,
it was his boundaries.
It was such good boundaries.
So for those of us who are still dealing with codependency issues,
Right.
It was a beautiful, what's the word I'm looking for? A beautiful example of creating healthy boundaries and doing it in a way, doing it with love.
Yeah, and also giving people the respect of their choices, mm-hmm. which is like, listen, you know, it's your choice. So this is what happens. And
right, it's your choice, but I don't need to have that choice in my life.
Yeah, and I actually, because you said the quotes, I was able to just find, I'm going to just read you this quote this guy says to him. I'll just read the whole thing. Okay, so he says, I wonder, huh, all these mornings you've been sitting in my study, sitting, have you had any moments of stillness? Because you're right, Ruben, the world does keep moving and it can be a damn cruel place. But for me, these moments of stillness, that place, that's the kingdom of God. So is that kind of like...
Yeah, and I think right yeah. after that, he made that final statement, which was...
Yes.
You know, in those moments of stillness, no one will ever abandon you because you're not relying on anyone other than yourself.
That's it. What a deep movie.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I just loved it. I know you have to go, but
no, that's fine.
Well, listen.
It was a good movie.
Did I'm you like
yeah,
it?
No, I really yeah. liked it. And I also like, I don't really know how to talk about like the cinematic.
No, I don't care about
for?
That. Cinematic. No, it's fine. We don't do that here.
Cinematics. Is that yeah. a word?
Maybe.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Like, I know what you mean.
I don't know. Because I was just, I also was noticing, you know, just the way that it was filmed, like dark and grungy and smoky and, you know, the cigarettes burning in the ashtray. It was also very, like, a little triggering for me. Like,
was it really?
Yeah. You know, there were pieces and I'm like, oh God.
You're like, oh my goodness. Yeah.
But yeah, no, I mean, it was very well done.
Yeah, very I really well liked it. And I mean, I could go on a whole tangent about that, but I try not to do that as much. Mm-hmm. One thing I told you, like the visual storytelling, I love... The thing with the donut really stood out to me mm-hmm. because it's very smart. And people don't realize when they watch things like that how smart it is because mm-hmm. all they had to do was show you the first time that he sits down and he's frustrated, right? And he, mm-hmm. like you said, he smashes that donut and then he tries to put it back together, mm-hmm. which just, even in that moment, says so much.
Yeah.
That the next scenes you see later is you see the donut totally fine, mm-hmm. which means that by itself shows the change in him.
Yeah.
That the donut hasn't been smashed. And it's such a simple little detail, mm-hmm. but it's like, it speaks volumes. And I kept wondering, actually, that first scene when he did it, if that was an actor's choice or mm-hmm. that's where I go. Because I was like,
yeah,
I have a feeling he just did that.
He might have, yeah. And just the idea yeah. of him repeatedly smashing and remolding. And it was almost like... him being angry with himself for being angry, you know,
it's
he just, couldn't just let it be smashed. He had to put it back together like, oh no, I'm not, this
and
isn't
that's
me.
That fixing part of him, mm-hmm. like with his mm-hmm. girlfriend and like all the things, like he can't just leave it. Like mm-hmm. which is also the reason why you like him, I think, because mm-hmm. he's got that little piece, which is like, he knows he's got to freak out, but then he's like, all right, I just got to mm-hmm. like make it okay again,
right.
which I can relate to, you know, it's yeah. just funny, but,
absolutely.
Well, listen, thanks Sound of Metal.
Yeah.
Come back you. Again. And anytime you have a topic, I use this to talk about topics.
Yeah. Okay.
If you guys want to check out Tara,
mm-hmm.
she's got all the stuff.
Podcast is the Be Soulfish podcast. I didn't do an upload this week, but the one I recorded this week will launch on Wednesday. So they usually do launch Wednesday mornings. I think this will be my 24th episode.
Nice.
Always looking for guests as well. So the topic is trauma, human connection and healing, which can really span to pretty much anything. Anything and everything. And then I'm also under Soul Vitality, so Vitality but with a K instead, on Instagram and Facebook, and offering some new stuff this year. And I teach yoga and Pilates and all that stuff everywhere.
You do it all.
Yeah.
Sweet. Well, thanks for being here. Everyone, please check out all the shows on the Social Podcast Network. I will put that in the description. If you're looking, go there. You can find a link. And support the shows. If you're local, reach out. Message us. Have anything to say? Let me know. Have a movie you want me to talk about? Tell me. I actually am going to preempt this with, I think I'm going to be watching Promising Young Woman, which is out in the theaters right now, which I'm really anxious to see because it looks really good. So maybe put that on your list if you guys are wanting to see. You can also get it on demand now, too, but I think it costs too much money if you want to do it that way. But if you can't go to the movies, I'm sorry. I probably shouldn't be going either. All right, guys. Thanks for joining me. And
thank
I
you.
Will see you next time on The Film Effect.